feeling like I'm an islander. My mother says, take 75 cents for the homeless man. And my mother says, take 75 cents for the homeless man. And she'd say that if they pick your pocket on Madison Square Garden, chalk it up to experience. And if you meet your soulmate in Central Park, a little tip. Keep your eye on your Ben Frank.
And welcome to Spirit's Work, the metaphysical, paranormal, and spiritual information show that is designed to stretch your mind and help you to think outside of the box. And on today's show, as usual, my husband Mick will be deep trance channeling, and with the aid of our spirit friends, we are going to be finding out about global warming. And if you'd like to join us with a question relating to our subject, the phone lines are open. The number is a toll-free number, and it's in the U.S., 877-876-5227, and in Canada it's 888-810-8322. And just in case there are any international callers,
insomniacs,
yes, still awake, it's 001-530-876-3222. But that, I'm afraid, is not toll free. Okay.
Well, hello. I'm Mick Avery. As well as Spirit's Work on the wonderful bbsradio.com every Monday at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 1 p.m. PST. Yes, we have another radio show which is called Spirit Teaching, and you can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. PST. If you want to know more about us, our books, CDs, book an Akashic reading, or any of the other services that we offer, Please do go and visit our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com, or alternatively, www.spiritsworkradio.com. Now, as Sylvie said, I am a deep trance medium, and each week, live on the show, I channel Gregory Hay, who had an Earth life 300 years ago. I have the ability to completely hand over my physical body to the spirit world, so they use it to speak through. And I know absolutely nothing of the event, about what's happening at the time, or very much afterwards either. When I go into the trance state, my conscious mind and my spirit are transported elsewhere by the spirit team who work with us. They take me to a totally different place. Sometimes I understand where it is that they've taken me, and other times I don't. And it really doesn't matter whether I do remember it or not. I know some people put a great deal of store by that, but really, the point is, from our perspective, if you concentrate on where it is you're going, then you're not really going to be able to give yourself 100% in free will motivation to the spirit world to use your physical body. That means you'll always be employing your busy mind. So as I say, I don't only miss the whole show, but I very, very rarely remember anything that took place but when they took me away either. Anyway, I'm going to hand you back to Sylvie now, and all I have to say really is, do have a great show, and I guess I'll probably listen to it in about 6 months' time.
Yeah,
so, goodbye from me.
About 6 months behind.
That's some of my life, folks. I'm 6 months behind.
Mm. Well, yes. I'm not going to carry on that tack. Okay, so, well, Gregory Hay, who you will be listening to, is the spokesperson for a group of spirits of higher intelligence called the White Cloud Group. And they consist of many great minds, as well as regular people. And in between them all, they have access to vast knowledge and insight. They come to bring their teachings because there is a need for us to gain an understanding beyond the constraint of our human minds. The subject matter we cover is limitless and will hopefully help you to become more knowledgeable and better informed as to the nature of your existence on Earth, as well as your continued life after physical death. We do not have any religious bias or political persuasion, and it is only our mission to bring truthful information and knowledge through our gifts of spirit, to help people enhance their lives and the lives of others, and to restore the balance and the well-being of the planet. As I said, we are talking about global warming tonight, and really we can't talk about it too much. So if you have a question that you would like to ask Gregory or a comment you would like to join us with the discussion, do call us. It's toll free in the US, 877-876-5227, and also in Canada it's 888-810-8322. And if you have a suggestion for a show topic that you would like us to cover 1 week, then do get in touch. We do. In fact, this was one that we're doing tonight. And also, in fact, our listener who actually sent us in some emails prior to the show as well, because she can't get to hear it on the night. So thank you for that, Ursa. So, okay, well, I do believe Gregory's with us.
With love and light and peace be upon your journey, friend.
Thank you so much, Gregory. There goes my voice again.
Must be something to do with the energy, friend.
It must be, I think, yes. It only really happens when we do this.
Well, we'll have to put it down to that. We'll try to mitigate it in the following situation.
Hmm. Okay, well, it's been quite a topical thing. What was the Live Earth concerts this weekend? And it's always topical as far as we're concerned, the environmental issues. World. I mean, that's one of the prime reasons why the White Cloud Group actually decided to that's a funny noise then. I'm sorry. That was a funny noise down the phone, wasn't it, Gregory?
Yes, I believe someone swallowed something they didn't mean to swallow.
Okay. Oh, here we are. Hello, caller?
Hello, is that me?
Yes, this is the Spirit Teaching Spirits Work Show.
Hi. Yeah, I just happened upon you, and I'm intrigued. I would love to get information about why I'm here this time around, and specifically what it is I might be here to do that will bring me an exchange of financial abundance.
Well, I think... you're probably going to have to try the next show. I think Mr. Destiny's on at 7:30 on a different wavelength to us. It's still BBS. If you would like to go back to the studio, because we're not doing readings tonight.
Okay.
Okay, but there is somebody that does that at 7:30 on a different wavelength. With
all right.
BBS. Okay, so you phone in at about 7:30, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Okay. So here we are. Right. So I have some questions.
How nice.
Quite a few questions here.
Yes.
Looking only from the standpoint of reducing carbon emissions, nuclear power appears to provide a relatively clean and cheap fuel source.
Yes.
As long as we choose not to consider the future problems of its waste products, can you outline just how dangerous not considering the waste problem will be for the future?
Yes, but first of all, let us dispel the myth about nuclear fuel apparently being a cheap source.
Okay.
Because, first of all, you have to take into account its very construction. So that really is the first thing we need to look at when observing situations about one particular fuel source or another. The cost of its construction. What does it really take to run a nuclear power plant? Well, to begin with, it takes another power plant to run a nuclear power plant. That is, it takes one that is either oil-fired, coal-fired, or gas-fired. So that has to be built first before you can actually build a nuclear power plant to run. The reason why is quite simple. You have to have a power plant in order to be able to process the fuels necessary to start the process of a nuclear power plant. Once you have that situation up and running, you also then have to also consider this, that you need the extra power station in order to actually build a nuclear power plant to begin with. And as I say, to bring about the first environmental conditions for it.
I see.
So the whole situation is that it is in fact going to cost you two power plants to build a nuclear power plant. And that is a part of the cost which is never brought into the equation, as far as we can see, in our observances of human physical practice. It is something which is apparently just dropped out of the window, away from the central theme of what people think and actually have assimilated that nuclear energy should produce. Yes, I understand that when nuclear energy was first brought about, it was considered and hailed by those scientists who brought about the idea that this was actually something which was going to save the planet, that it was actually something which was going to provide clean, renewable energy, in a sense, which actually was limitless. Well, that is the first myth. It's not limitless. In fact, there is only enough uranium cake, that is the uranium in its raw form, to actually exist for a power plant, for any power plants worldwide, for 50 years. That's it, maximum. You only have 50 years of possible consignment of nuclear energy and to use it in that way to produce electricity or any other power source. So that is the first thing that you have to consider. You only have a window of 50 years until you have used up all of the raw material of uranium cake which exists in the entire planet. There is no more after 50 years. So, in actual fact, the situation that you are observing is, in point of fact, a complete misconception. Because those people who advocate it, and do not forget that in actual fact, nuclear power plants were only really an offshoot. An accident, if you like. It was for those scientists who were involved in the nuclear technology work whilst they were making something which was to be produced for war and for power and control of planetary forces, of the human condition, of thought. That was its actual initial inception. That's why human beings bothered at all to research the nuclear energy system. It was to produce something, an article of war, which could then be harnessed and utilized for power. The very fact that it was then equated with as a power source for ordinary human beings to live a better life from was merely a spin-off to try for the scientists involved in the work to try to vilify themselves. To make it all right, the work that they were doing actually as an event of sheer horror and a waste of human life was actually there. It was going to really be something that everyone would be able to depend upon for cheap, limitless fuel. So in actual fact, it is not limitless at all. It's finite, and it only has 50 years left. From this time now, until it completely runs out, you will have exhausted it. There won't be a drop left anywhere. So that's the first thing to fully understand about nuclear energy. It's only a finite process. The problem with it, however, is that the storage, the ramifications of what you're left with, you don't even have or possess the technology to actually deal with the waste. Yes, I understand. Many people have decided they can bury it under mountains and things like that. They haven't actually really resourced the idea or the technology in which to do this. I understand that they're burying them in containers deep underground, and that these containers are lined with this and that, different forms of lead, which of course is another form of uranium anyway. And that these are all things set in clay, which are then going to make it so that the situation is quite all right and happy. However, it isn't. Because what you're looking at is bringing about a condition which is then putting at odds the whole condition of this deeply radioactive material being set against such things as the water table. Yes, it may well be at the time that the site is surveyed that it is quite all right for the water table, perhaps because the water table is nowhere near it. However, do not forget, human beings and their ravishing of the earth is depleting the water table all the time. And that water table is actually being changed and altered. It's sinking. And the lower it goes, the closer it will be toward such things as these nuclear dumps and that kind of thing. Another alternative, I understand, is what the British are doing, which is merely dumping it into deep trenches which are just off the islands themselves. I do understand that there's one of these exists in the Irish Sea, which runs north to south, just off the coast of Cumberland. And I understand, too, that this is something which is actually still now having a very dramatic effect, quite simply because they're buried in concrete containers. And we all know what happens to concrete when it's immersed in salt water. So the situation for that is obviously untenable. Whoever thought of that ridiculous idea really wasn't thinking at all. Quite simply because obviously something which is that corrosive means that the actual core structure of what you're trying to bury is not going to be released in 100 years' time or 1,000 years' time, but is actually going to be very soon. And that is something which is not actually measured because no one now has been down there to actually verify that these containers are actually in the state that they should be.
Well, yeah, it's like a draw in the short straw, isn't it? No, I don't want to go down there. No, you go down there. What person in their right mind would want to?
Yes, quite so.
Well, what is the resulting effect on that environment then?
Well, it hasn't begun yet.
No.
But what I'm saying that it will be.
Yes.
Well, that it will be that the concrete that surrounds it will eventually corrode. And what will happen then is that the casement which is surrounding those within the concrete, you see the concrete's on the outside, the casement then which is inside of that, which contains the nuclear fuel, is then open to the elements of salt water, which in fact will not take that long to be corroded in that kind of environment. And don't forget that one of the added burdens of global warming in itself is the very fact that the water content and the salinity is changing all the time. So one of the effects that you have of the rising sea temperature is that for every degree centigrade it rises, the salinity of the ocean actually becomes compounded twofold. So it means that for every degree, you will have more than double the amount of salt, which is then a part of the actual salt water. It's one of the reasons, actually, I have to say, why it is that fish stocks diminishing now because of overfishing and pollution and all of the other results of human infestation. It quite simply means that at the time when humanity think it's all going to be safe, that perhaps that these fish stocks are going to replenish themselves miraculously after they're being overfished, it simply means that the salinity will actually change the environment to such an extent that the fish won't be able to survive anyway. You also, of course, have the added burden to this little constraint, which means that if you have power stations, which incidentally are usually built upon waterways or some such, because of course they need water, extreme amounts of water, to be able to cool to keep the reactors cool, to stop them from melting down and imploding upon themselves. This, of course, is a matter which then means they're releasing, of course, large amounts of highly toxic water, which, of course, as we know, is kept in lagoons at this time. This is also, of course, true to do with the water which is cooling around the isotopes of uranium as it is actually used, because, of course, the spent uranium fuels have to be kept and housed in that salt water for a considerable length of time, perhaps not in the salt water, but in desalinated water, so that it is actually then rendered less harmful to the environment. The problem is, of course, you then have an extreme amount of water, hundreds of thousands of gallons, that you have to then deal with, as I say, which ends up in very large lagoons and has to actually have a process of cooling down after being in such close contact with the spent uranium fuel. You see, uranium only lasts a certain time. That's why they need a certain amount of cake, uranium cake, in order to replenish the stock. Now, it actually takes only 2%. I'm sorry, I'll say that again. If you have 1,000 pounds of uranium cake, raw cake, it will only make 2% of it into actual uranium, which is usable for a power station. Oh. So it's actually not very efficient.
No.
If you think of the amount that you actually have to compress down, you have to put it through the centrifugal force in order to actually separate the particles, and obviously most of it, 98% of it, you throw away. You only use 2%. So that is something that is worth remembering when you are looking at the efficiency of what it is you're dealing with. Because actually, it's actually not that combustible a material in its raw state. It's only when you refine it, and it takes a great deal to refine it. That's my point, really, about the initial startup cost when you are looking at such a fuel as that. You have to equate the full picture. And, of course, it's all very heavily subsidized and uninsurable, I understand, from your side of life. The mechanics of material value haven't actually gone that far to actually be able to say, well, if you have an accident with this material, we will cover the situation. Because clearly it's such a robust material that no one will actually insure it. That means, surely, that it's a very volatile material, which the final burden will end up being with the people who have also already paid for it in great quantity. So therefore, if you're really looking at an energy source as expensive as that, the true value of it means that the actual cost of the fuel, of course, which is kept to a minimum, quite simply because they don't want people to really know the true cost of the fuel. If that were the case, my friend, you would see a 1,000-fold increase in your actual fuel bill. But of course, it means that it's actually coming from other places. And that is something that we observe is the stupidity of the whole situation of this so-called energy, green energy, in a sense. That's what it's quoted as I understand. But really, all you're doing is leaving your children, or their children, rather, to pick up the pieces of what you have laid upon the planet's surface or buried it deep within its bowels of water or bowels of earth and rock.
And, yes, in more ways than one, because, like you say, if there's only enough for the next 50 years anyway...
Yes.
Most of my questions are, you've just blown them out of the water.
Oh, I am so sorry. No, I'm not meaning to do that. I was just really giving an outline.
Well, we're going... Yes, well, basically... Yeah, but it's a non-starter because you said that it's we haven't got enough for more than 50 years anyway.
No.
But having said that, I think we need to still discuss the ways of the, like for instance, is there any realistic or safe and viable method of dealing and storing the nuclear waste?
No.
There's not. So.
No, there isn't. That's my point, really. This is all make-believe. It's an industry which hasn't even learnt to crawl. It's only just learning to breathe. In a sense, it's untried water, all of it. All of the whole situation is, well, let's wait and see. And that is an attitude which really is playing with people's lives. That you see, the problem is that you're faced with this situation of, on the one hand, you have an industry which actually says and iterates that this is an energy which you cannot do without, quite simply because, of course, humanity's insatiable appetite for energy, purely because human beings are not looking at it in a logical way. They're looking at it only in the way that they're told to look at it. Rather than looking at it in a way of renewable energy, which actually does not harm the environment. And that, surely, is something which is much more inclined that you could actually make a healthy start from. That you could actually, quite simply, once you have, for example, once you've built a windmill, or once you have built a... other forms of power plant, perhaps to do with solar energy or something like that, or waveform technology, perhaps even growing things like fruit and vegetables in order to be able to power your motor vehicle rather than the soy produce or something like that, or the what is the other one? Corn oil, I believe, that at this moment in time is being charged as being something which is of great benefit to humanity. Well, I have to say, actually, fruit is a much better system because, in fact, fruit, the pectin in fruit will be 8 or 10 times more viable a source than all of the amount of these oils from other vegetations, because they're not actually as nutrient-rich. They're not actually as volatile as pectin, for example. In its truest raw form, you could actually have a much greater velocity to come from the energy from fruit than you would and from the natural sugars in fruit than you would from any form of petrol. Any form of petrol.
Gosh, is there any one fruit that is better than the other? Because I've heard various...
Apples, peaches, oranges, I understand, would all do very well.
And obviously you could, there would be specific type of fruit that maybe wouldn't be so good to eat, but that would be particularly good for that sort of thing, fast growing and...
Yes, well, what I'm actually...
hardy.
Yeah, well, yes, quite so. And what I'm actually saying as well is that that would be a situation that genetically modified abilities for these kinds of fruit to be able to perhaps produce something which isn't exactly palatable, but which could be harnessed for fuel. That is a much better and agreeable way to use genetically modified scientific knowledge and to move in that direction. Because did you know that it's something which does not even produce a carbon footprint once it is actually thoroughly investigated, once the science behind it is something which is actually really properly invested in? It will become that it will be, the refinement will be so pure that in fact it would increase, for example, the mileage that motor vehicles would be able to take per milliliter, per whatever, for the volume. And that in actual fact it will produce no carbon emission. Nothing. Eventually.
And will the...
Obviously it will depend upon the refining process, but what I'm saying to you is that the possibility is there for this to be an enrichment process which is absolutely pure. And that is something which can potentially be of great, not just great benefit to the planet, but that actually you need a smaller amount of it because it's more volatile. So it will actually go further.
Is there any way, I know certain trees are better than others as far as the planet is concerned, would these particular trees make a difference to our Earth?
Yes,
in beneficial ways?
Yes, yes. Well, that is a very good point, my friend, I do have to say, because, of course, apple trees are deciduous.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, so too, of course, are oranges and limes and lemons and that kind of thing. All of these have good citric acid, good citric sugars as well. Perhaps not so much the lemons, but certainly the oranges and apples and fruit like that. So it really does mean that a great deal can be gained by harnessing large amounts of this and actually changing it into a viable fuel. So, and that, of course, is something that you can just grow. Yes, I understand that there will be certain conditions to do with it that you will have to be very careful of if you are going to genetically modify it, that this then does not contaminate other crops for eating purposes. So it is something which you would have to, as a human race, be very careful over the integration of it. You would have to keep it very isolated from different scenarios and situations. So, for example, this would be then something which would only be able to be viable in a very in remote locations, something like that. You wouldn't be able to have them next to or within a certain distance of ordinary crops, something like that. Mm-hmm. Because naturally, of course, with whatever bees you have left, will actually then have a pollination problem unless you can overcome the problem that actually generally runs with genetically modified crops toward the well-being of bees and that kind of thing, and the way that they will naturally transmute that genetic origin into the origins of ordinary plant species. I digress, but it is worth noting that you have to think of these different options when you are looking at the viable resources of the solving of planetary warming,
mm-hmm.
and how you are actually going to integrate this into the planetary source of well-being. So if you are looking at the situation that you want humanity to exist beyond the 17, 18 years that we have already discussed previously that humanity has in order to change this scenario around before they come to the tipping point, then you actually understand and perhaps that you have to act very quickly in order to bring this about. You have to stop the attitude to begin with that humanity deals itself and favors itself to be consumer orientated and to actually only want for me. But instead of that, to be responsible for what generations are going to do in place of you and how they are actually going to cope with the legacy that you leave them. Because believe me, dear friends, in the spirit world, you'll still have to cope with it, with what you leave them. And that's what we're doing now. That's why, exactly why we are communicating now. Because we realize the legacy that we have left the planet is in disarray. That it is something which we observe the course of change of history has diverted the intentions from other ancestors, from others who have come before you and who really recognize the fruit of change being a bad apple, being not what was actually desired in order to enhance the survival of humanity. And therefore, of course, the survival of all spirit, wanting to have a human physical existence on the planet of Earth.
And I'd just like to say thank you for anybody that may have just joined us on Spirit's Work. You're listening to Spirit Guide Gregory Hay, being channeled by Deep Trance Medium Mick Avery. I'm Sylvie Avery, and we're discussing global warming. If you would like to join us with a question about global warming, not a reading show, about global warming, anything to do with this, or just phone up for a chat about it, put your two pennies in. You can phone us on a toll-free number in the US. It's 877-876-5227. And Canada is 888-810-8322.
I thought they had cents here.
Okay, 2 cents worth.
Yes.
That's right. Yes, far spotted.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. How quickly and how far can radioactive contamination be dispersed through the air or wind or water?
Well, actually, as you have seen through the Chernobyl accident and Three Mile Island, I understand, and other similar accidents elsewhere upon the planet's surface, that actually a cloud of nuclear fallout in that sense can actually last quite a long time. In the Chernobyl accident, I understand, it actually drifted over much of northern Europe. The prevailing wind was not in the way that people had hoped, perhaps, that it would just blow out over the rest of Russia, but rather than that, it actually blew in the opposite direction and went westward instead, which was a catastrophe for many of the beings, perhaps, that actually do not understand the plethora of ensuing dis-ease, not just in the surrounding areas of Poland and also Romania to a certain extent, as well as the Ukraine, I understand, have actually suffered marked increases of incidence of cancer, of leukemia, all different kinds of cancers that have become endemic in that particular part of the population, not just cancer, of course, but extreme deformities in childbirth, and in fact, with many women actually becoming barren as well. Mm-hmm. And not only women becoming barren, but men becoming barren as well. And that's something worth remembering. And I understand as well that this cloud actually appeared over Britain as well. And that was something, I believe, that people at the time were told to shut their windows. Yes, but really, it's not going to work. And so the situation is, you see, that actually people were actually quite affected by it, even though they didn't have any instant sickness. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is something which 30, 40 years later on is something which will then create a shortage of life for that human being.
Maybe cancers and things like that.
Oh, yes, exactly so, yes. And in exactly the same way, of course, as cancers can be recorded by a number of different situations, even the proximity of high-powered electrical lines, that kind of thing. So you must look at all these different environmental constraints, which really should be looked at, that are, of course, naturally denied by those globalized industries of power, which bring about power to human beings, to human life, to allow this human habitation in the condition that you are accustomed to. That's what I'm talking about, in a sense, that human beings are accustomed to a very specific type of condition. So, luxury, perhaps the luxuries that are afforded, or the kinds of situations that people want to have in their lives because they're encouraged to have these possessions, material wants and gains in their lives, actually are not willing to pay the price for these conditions. The genuine price of it is something which is actually going to be felt in generations to come, if humanity survives that long.
Absolutely.
Yes.
In the 1980s, Jacques Cousteau pointed out some sites in Eastern Europe that were just starting to leak radiation.
Yes.
Where were those sites, and what has happened to them and the problems since then?
Yes, well, actually, those sites, I understand, are really to do with, as I say, Poland, Romania, to do with other countries around the Baltic states, which were at one time really to do with the Russian dominance, if you like. And so these are also to do with countries which were previously a part of the Russian Federation, which then actually have since become separated from that. Georgia, of course, is still going through this, and this is actually because of the arcane system in which these power stations were actually built, and that what has actually ensued is that they weren't properly maintained, that this was something which was very lax, and a great many of the situations like spills, cracked pipes and that kind of thing were really things that were just covered up by that administration, pretended that they didn't really happen, didn't even let the outside world know that of such things. And I understand that the nuclear industry now, which is trying to monitor different situations, of course, many of these countries won't actually allow people to come in to monitor the degradation of their stations themselves and the upkeep of them. So what you are actually looking at is, you see, the problem is that each power station only actually has a shelf life, I understand, that's the saying, a shelf life of perhaps 25, 30 years, perhaps stretched a little bit longer if they are updated significantly in that time to allow them to perform a little while longer. So you actually have hundreds of stations which are now suddenly coming toward the end of their life. That is why it is that there is this large clamor to build new ones. But what I'm saying is it's a false economy because, in actual fact, what you have to do in order to build a nuclear power station, you have to build a coal-fired power station to begin with in order to harness it. So the situation is, in fact, untenable because you have a condition, a mass condition, which is costing you tenfold what is actually to be perceived as the actual price per unit price of the energy that you use, that is produced in that environment. It's actually much more inefficient than it is actually that people are actually made aware of. So I would have to say that, yes, these conditions are still continuing, and that these energy centers are, in fact, actually degrading the environment around them in a far more insidious way than many people would have you believe, because they're trying to cover up the very fact of the pollution that these situations create in their environment. They're not clean at all. They're very dirty, and in fact, prolongingly dirty, because you still do not have the technology with which to be able to treat the material that is produced from these scenarios, from these stations. You haven't even advanced that yet. So this is a technology which may possibly surface in 100 years' time. Clearly, you aren't going to have that long to be able to deal with it. Because for many of them, the situations will have burst by then.
They're thinking about, but yes, it's a fact.
It is.
Absolutely, yes. So, are there places where there is a contamination problem that people have not been made aware of?
Yes, there are many contamination problems all over the planet. I cannot just say one or two, unfortunately, because it's something which is not contained. It's something which is beginning to grow within the water table. Not just the water table, but in the oceans themselves.
So it's pretty much everywhere.
Well, yes, the point is that this is a situation which has not actually been verified. It's a situation which has been kept quiet. And been kept quiet not just by government, but by the companies themselves, the corporations themselves, because otherwise they would be closed. Quite simply because it's a resource which is only kept alive to produce the power for nuclear energy for destructive materials. Don't say that these weapons are not going to be used. They're used all the time. It's just that no one has yet created this situation in further anger, but it's only really a matter of time. It's only a matter of time.
Okay. So, are there physical effects and radio contamination from nuclear sources that we are not recognizing as such? Well, we've said cancer and things like that, haven't we?
Yes.
So, I'll ask you another one.
Well, no, the point is, you see, that what you also have to consider is that radiation, background radiation, is something which exists throughout the planet. The problem that you have is in the count of parts per million, that you are told human beings have a safe environment to operate in.
Mm-hmm.
That's a matter of conjecture. It's not a matter of true science, because it is such a young science that it is only thought and believed that if a person perhaps works in an environment which has so many parts, kilojoules or whatever it is, that how it's measured in parts per million, that is considered a measurement which is safe for human occupation. That's only a supposition. Really, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the cycle of 60 years has not actually passed from when a person was first originally exposed to such a contamination of this much that is measured as being safe for human activity. It hasn't been 60 years since that measurement was first illuminated. So you cannot say that that is illumination, a measurement which is safe, quite simply because it's an untellable, undefinable quantity.
Well, yes, but I mean, how long does the contamination last? We can't say, can we?
Well, no. The point is that it has been figuratively understood that in the same way of harnessing and understanding that you have background radiation, after all, that is how you measure time. That's how you measure archaeological artifacts, by the amount of radiation, the deterioration of the radiation, background radiation in a particular object. So you are able to define the age of rocks, the geology of something, and the time date which is within it is something which is accurately measured by the count of its nuclear part and how many parts per million it is degrading. It allows you to measure the time field in existence since it was brought about, since it was last physically active as a material of life. So you therefore have that is something which constructs the background radiation in which all human life exists, and all animal life too. You then have the difference of that, an appreciation of that if you have a radiation which is actually far higher than that for people who are contaminated at a certain safe level, you are then assuming that this is something which is going to be characteristically played out in the same measurement as you have already measured that background radiation. The problem exists, however, that for human contamination, it is exacerbated in exactly the same way that, as I said, for describing the salinity of the oceans and the environmental pressures that global warming will actually have upon it, will exacerbate and enlarge that structure of energy with each degree change of heat or temperature upon the ocean surface itself. Don't forget that the more water there is, the greater the situation, the consistency of the heat from the sun being absorbed by the water. The more salt there is, the greater the absorption of energy from the sun, which means exponentially that you will increase the velocity of heating from the sun the more the salt water is generated by the depletion of oxygen from that environment. Don't forget that oxygen-enriched water is more plentiful not in the tropics, but is much more plentiful in the frozen oceans of the world, quite simply because it means that water is more stable to harness oxygen, to keep it within itself, because the molecules are more stable in that environment. When you heat water, when you warm water by any degrees, you are then releasing the amount of oxygen present in the water, which increases the salinity of that water environment.
How will the Earth ever be able to cleanse herself once contaminated?
A very difficult question to answer, because this is all to do with the knock-on effect of how you have carbon transmitting from one part of the environment to another. Now, for example, my friend, it is very well to see that if you have carbon which is immersed in the earth, then that is something which is going to be perhaps, shall we say, buried and therefore not allowed to be within the environment. In some instances, you could say that the technology, the idea of technology behind the use of fossil fuels such as coal, and actually drawing the carbon footprint out of the fossil fuel that you burn in that way, and then burying it in the ground, is possibly a form of scientific process which then may be able to harness that fuel into a cleaner environmental way. But I'm saying that the process is something which is fraught with cost. The sheer engineering complexity that we can see from and observe from our side of life to just bring this about means that the fuel, which is supposedly cheap, such as coal, is in fact not as cheap as you make it to be, because you then have to bury it afterward.
Okay, so we don't know how we're going to get rid of it.
Well, burying it, obviously, is one way of doing it, but the point I'm making, really, is that, well, then, in order to bury it, you have to make sure that it is not going to contaminate anything else. I'm well aware that carbon is actually an inert substance if it is kept in one place. The point is, it's a very fine particulate. So it's something which can rise up in the atmosphere if left to do that. Yes.
Okay, so, well, very, very interesting. Thank you, Gregory. Thank you very much.
We thank you so much, dear Fred. God bless.
God bless you. So, well, that's really given us something to think about, hasn't it? And don't forget, if you'd like to join us again on Thursday, we have another show in the afternoon at 1 p.m., that's Pacific time. And, oh, no, we haven't this week, have we? Oh, yes, we have. Well, no, it's a rerun next week. It's rerun next week. But anyway, we're on also tomorrow night on Artists First at 7 o'clock. If you'd like to go to our website, it's spirit-teaching.com, okay? We do have Akashic readings on our website that you can go and have a look at. If you would like to book up for an Akashic reading with us, there's all sorts of information about that and lots of other good stuff. Anyway, we hope you've enjoyed the show, and thank you so much for listening to Spirit's Work. And until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.
Hi, this is Brentwood from Legion of Love. Just letting you know you can now hear some of our new released and unreleased tracks on our website, legionoflove.com. You can also purchase our EPs, Great Matter Tunes and Matters of the Heart, as well as all of our singles, including Shine a Light and Love is the Answer, at most major download sites. And of course, you can hear them on BBS Radio, the number one internet radio network in the world. Peace and love. Yeah.